Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
She is the brilliant, the talented Jamie Loftus!
Wake up in the morning feeling slightly giddy. Pack up Sunny and Flea. We're about to hit this city. Before I leave, grab my wallet and a couple of Tums. Because when I leave for hot dogs, I'm going to have some yums. I'm done talking about veneers, nears. No time for ice cleaners, eaners. Because this is the summer of wieners, wieners. Slice top, heat those buns up all crispy. Hamburgers can miss me. I want those furters grilly. It's
wow.
Still going on top. Onions chopped, mustard and that ketchup sop. Relish if you wish. Tucking hot dogs, like guys. That was so long. That from Uncle Brew at the _ Brew.
The brew,
Jamie, AKA contributor.
Wow,
really brought the heat today. Hope fucking I did classic. It justice.
Wieners. I thought there was gonna summer be a like wieners, a hockey. Wieners. I thought there'd be a hockey reference to going tweeners, but that was me projecting. I was like, oh, maybe some New England hockey lore to interject there, but
oh no, summer of wieners, wieners.
Yeah, wieners, all wieners.
Yeah.
How's that been? How did the summer of wieners treat you?
Oh, it was good. My body is, I would say, basically recovered, and I have to kind of jump in for round two soon. But
for people who don't know what we're talking about, what yes. I'm just saying, like, how's the summer of wieners?
How's there? I've just been having a ton of sex. No, I have been working on a book about hot dogs for basically the summer. And we were traveling around eating hot dogs everywhere, all over the country, and just been like talking and thinking about hot dogs for several months. The same stretch of months where a study speculated, heavy on speculated, that eating a hot dog takes away 36 minutes of your one human life every time you do it. The summer I ate like 250 hot dogs, but
wow.
I digress.
How much time does that give you at this point? Are you down to like...
I'm like essentially a time traveler.
Wait, you did how many hot dogs did you say you think you ate?
Is around like 200, but okay, I need to do the...
Let's call
the
it 220. Times 36 minutes.
Okay.
Probably only like a week that you lost, right? Thereabouts.
Right? I mean, I don't, but also...
132 hours. That's 132 hours.
Okay.
So it's like, fuck it, you know?
Yeah, dude.
Who gives a shit? And also, something serotonin extends your life. It's kind of gravy.
Exactly. It all comes out. That's about 5.5 days of your life, apparently, that you lost by eating
worth
two.
Worth it.
I went up to 220.
Worth it.
See, I also fully think that if I looked deep enough into that study, it was funded by like Big Lettuce or something. I'm like, who did that study? How do you arrive at a figure like that? Lies, all lies.
Big
but it, the
big
summer
hamburger.
Of wieners.
I know. I was gonna say. Big. I was gonna say it speaks a lot to Jamie's where Jamie's at that she thinks the primary competitor to hot dogs is lettuce. It's like, you know, the thing, the two things that you make a salad out of, either lettuce or you know, a bunch of hot dogs.
Chapter one, the food spectrum. To the left, lettuce, and on the other end, the hot dog.
We all exist on a spectrum of lettuce to hot dog, and I'm unfortunately just fully a hot dog.
The one hot dog, one of my first memories is actually a hot dog experiment myself, where I was staying with a babysitter and she was like, you're going to have three types of hot dogs. We're going to grill them. We're going to boil them. And I forget what the third was, but I was like five.
You gotta
I
love when they fry
three them. Hot dogs, like all different kinds. I remember one being a little bit burnt and then I threw up.
Yes.
So... Yeah.
You don't did like you get burnt a... hot dogs? Oh,
I love
it. I didn't say I didn't like throw up from the taste. I think it was too much for my
you
little
just
body.
OD'd.
too much char for you.
My dad also had like I've been like very interested in how everyone has a story about hot dogs, even if they don't think they do. Where like my dad also, I was like, well, what's your hot dog memory? And then he was like, nothing. And then 2 days later, he told me the most like the weirdest story I'd ever heard about him. Yeah, it was that harsh too. He's like,
I love that
shut
joke.
Up.
Actually, wait.
Yeah, like,
but then
guys,
2 days
like,
later,
hours later,
like,
you're walking out. He's like, Jamie, stop. I need to tell you.
I need to tell you something. I haven't been forthright.
And then he told me about a time he worked at a dog track when he was 15, because he's very old. And then he was like, and he like ate 10 hot dogs in a day. And then he went to the hospital. I was like, that's a hot dog story. Like, what are you?
Yeah.
You know, look me in the face and say you have no hot dog story when you've been hospitalized over. Because that's like 1970s hot dogs. That's a lot of nitrates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when I saw like on, I think Driver's Diet, like Triple D or some like Food Network show, when I first saw like the Ripper, those deep fried hot dogs that they like come from New Jersey. I was like, this is the fucking intersection of all of my belief systems. And I spent like an entire summer with like my buddies. Like we would like do all kinds of fat. We would fry the hot dogs in. We rendered like 5 pounds of bacon to just deep fry our hot dogs in bacon grease. And we would spiral cut them. So they had like the most surface area for like maximum crispiness. Dude, I've been very invested in that market.
Talk. Everyone has a ridiculous hot dog. Wait, I'm going to text
spiral
you about
cut
that later.
Hot dogs.
And I'll do it in a voice.
So chic.
Kathy, you haven't had my spiral cut hot dogs.
Kathy really liked your Irving.
She did?
She did, yeah. Oh she mentioned God, it.
That's huge for you, Miles. That.
Put it on the resume.
Yeah.
What is something from your search history?
Right. So all of my answers to all these questions all surround the same theme right now. So recent search history, the thing that is predominant in my search history right now is I'm looking for like really good cycling shorts because I recently got into like biking and I went on this like 40 something mile bike ride this weekend and like my butt hurts, like my sits bones, like everything is in like deep, deep pain. And now I need to like gear up and actually buy actually good cycling gear.
What? So are, shorts make
a just
difference?
Rocking.
I'm so ignorant.
Yeah,
so
like the padded shorts.
Oh,
and I also,
right.
I'm also looking for like a different bike seat that has less padding compared because apparently that's better too. So it's like my search history is all about biking right now and specifically about like my butt pain.
right. How to relieve butt pain from biking? What kind
but,
of
like,
bike?
Seriously though,
like a road bike, gravel? What kind of?
Yeah, I have a 10-year-old road bike that I bought when I was doing my undergraduate degree, and I never really got into it very intensely. And then I moved to New York City, and I was too scared to bike in New York City. So, I have a bunch of friends who like are very intense cyclists, and they are building up my confidence. They're taking me on rides. I went through Central Park this weekend and Times Square and like contended with those cars and it was good. It was a good experience.
I'm also getting on my bike, but I just got an electric bike just to like kind of commute around so I don't drive my car as much.
Which
is great. But part of it is I live in one of the most hostile places for someone to be on a bicycle, which is LA. And I like you, like my partner, she goes to She'll bike into work. So she's like very comfortable on the roads.
Wow.
I grew up almost getting hit by cars to the point where I mostly would ride my bike on the sidewalk, which you're not supposed to do, just to like avoid the stress of that. But as I've gotten out more, I can totally identify with like the comfort level because like I at first hated cars like flying by me when I was on a bike. And now, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm learning my safety like sort of protocols, how to keep my head on a swivel, know how to read my body to signal to other cars and things like that.
Yes.
And I'm slowly gaining that confidence. So
like defensive bike techniques are so important and I'm like slowly learning them.
Yeah.
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 New York is no joke. I used to bike around New York a lot and have almost been sandwiched by a bus in between like a bus and a parked car.
I guess
and,
I don't know why I think LA is more hostile. I think it's because I see more people in New York being like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I'm out here.
Right.
And that when I'm like, oh, it must be easy to bike. But when I'm on the sidewalks of New York, I'm still like, man, I would not bike in this shit at all.
Yeah.
But I guess it's all about, learning the environment and getting used to it.
Yeah, I'm just getting comfy on my bike, you know?
Yeah.
I've definitely felt the pain of not having the right... My cycling pants were corduroy. And,
oh, boy.
I started a fire.
Yeah.
At one point. It was not good.
Just leaving a trail of fabric behind you.
What is something you think is overrated?
Guys, have you heard about this thing? The Oedipus Complex. Have you heard? I can't believe it. That's all. Anytime you bring up Freudian psychotherapy, all everyone's talking about is the Oedipus. Do you know what it is?
Oh, yeah.
Do I know like about an Oedipal complex? Yeah.
Yeah. You kill your dad and you have sex with your mom
and then rip your eyes out.
What is that about? That's gross.
I remember in high school, we had to read Oedipus Rex and I was like, bro, this is the one where he has sex with his mom and rips his eyes out. And like my teacher was like, there's a lot more than just that. And I'm like, okay. I guess
I thought you were going to say she was like, spoilers, Miles.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just more like that this idiot who this like young smart ass decided to just be like, we don't need to read this. This guy bangs his mom, rips his eyes out. We're good. Next.
Right. right. I can tell you everything you needed to know.
Yeah. I'm the spark notes right here.
As a learned man of books, Andy, is the Oedipus complex like overrated? Like, did Freud say, this is something that happens like sometimes and people are like, Freud said we all want to fuck our moms? Or did Freud actually say that shit?
Yeah, it's not like Freud himself. It's our sick society. It's our sick society that like really fixated upon that and then turned it into like a porn genre.
Right. Yeah, that is wildly popular.
What is it if it's your stepmother, though? Is that still Oedipal?
It's yeah. Steptable.
Steptable.
I think the other version is the Electra Complex, if I remember right. But it's gross. Let's stop talking about it. No one's doing it.
When was the last time you had to confront something like this? Because I feel like, man, I haven't seen it on Twitter recently, but has something come up recently? We're like, here we go with the Oedipal shit.
Right.
Just like all these creepy billionaires are doing this kind of stuff. Am I right? Billionaires killing their dads and sleeping with their moms. That's why we got to get rid of them. It's not about any economic stuff. It's that they're these gross creeps.
Right. I mean, your mouth.
You think Epstein's the only one?
Right. Yeah.
They're all like that.
Yeah. What's something you think is underrated, Eli?
Not to invite too much controversy, but phone calls.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I get it. I get that texting is useful in a lot of situations. I probably 60-40 text to phone myself, but this kind of raw hatred that's come against the very idea of speaking on the phone in the last few years is really strange to me. It feels like a technological step backwards. They said, well, what if we don't have to write these letters and telegrams anymore and we could just speak our thoughts into another person's head directly, and that we sort of undid that? That's strange to me.
Right. That it's like, now I can do instant telegrams to a person's pocket telegram station.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck. Yeah. No, yeah, I definitely see like there is, I don't know if it's generation. I think because like, as it for me as like a teenager or whatever, talking on the fucking landline was my blood. You know what I mean? There's no other way to communicate. I mean, there was AIM and shit like that, but the phone was like the next level because you could just leave the line open. You're both watching a TV show, not talking for fucking 30 minutes straight, doing your homework and stuff like that. And I think part of me, I still have a love for those times. So I definitely, I don't understand the hate for the phone. I guess if it's like for work or something, maybe why. But other than that, come on now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you lose so much over text. Like, there's been studies that found that, emails, just don't try to fucking tell a joke in a work email because you are going to fail. People are not going to get it.
Right.
Yep. You guys are right to kind of compare it to telegrams. I read every text that I receive in the voice of a wistful Civil War soldier writing home. Wow. Like in a Ken Burns documentary. Uh-huh. So that's just how my brain works.
And you say stop too, I think.
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what else? How else do I read the periods out loud?
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I'm on board.
Great.
But, this Gen Z audience of ours is going to tear you a new one, buddy.
Go for it. There's only three people in the world that'll still talk to me on the phone.
Right. Yeah.
So,
which is also funny when I think about it, like of the people, and I'm like, I call them, like, it's the same 10 people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's another level, though, of like friendship, though, too. Like, are you in the phone zone?
Oh, the phone zone. Yeah.
Because that's like when you're like, I have to call this person. I have to talk to them voice to voice.
Yeah. Man, I'm stuck in the phone zone with this one guy. Sucks, man.
Sucks. Just get me to the text zone already.
Yeah. Do you guys, like, when do you fit in your phone calls? Like, my wife is really good at like staying in touch with people, my wife, and she'll like call them when she's driving somewhere. Like, she's just like has a routine where she immediately like goes to her phone whenever there is like a free moment where I would be listening to a podcast. Essentially, she calls people.
Right.
Because podcast hosts are my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's
for me, Jack.
Yeah. I have parasocial relationships.
But I don't really have a time for it. It usually happens on the weekends for me, because like I'll be like meandering and I'll get a text and then I'm like, fuck it, I just need a call to like keep this thing going. Or half the time I'll just call because I'm driving and I don't want to I don't want to continue a conversation over text while it's sometimes just born out of safety more than like I gotta talk to this person. I'm like, yo, I'm driving, man, let's talk about this shit in the car.
Yeah.
So I don't have a routine. Eli, what about you?
Mine's usually driving. That's kind of because it, Atlanta, I think similarly to LA, very car heavy city, and it takes half an hour to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, all my podcasts come while I'm cooking or cleaning.
Yeah. Mm.
And then driving is phone calls
for the phone zone. Got it.
Yep. Amazon would have a thing to say about that, as we'll get to later. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back, and there is a developing, worsening humanitarian crisis on the other side of the border in Del Rio, Texas. There are mostly Haitian migrants currently living under a bridge and basically just waiting to see if the United States will help them.
Yeah.
And the answer seems to be no.
It's sadly, they're seeking asylum in the United States, and what, you know, Trump and Biden, they seem to be doing the same thing, which is basically telling them, no, we are unable to do that. Biden hasn't deviated much from Trump's policies, which is essentially like, wait in Mexico during this period, and we will use a CDC guideline to sort of justify sending people back on flights no matter what, under the guise of essentially protecting the U.S. from COVID. And a lot of people are really skeptical whether or not that is even having the positive results they claim to have by saying like, oh, well, these people, we got to get them out because of the pandemic. But it's just a way to justify the inhumane treatment of these people who are seeking asylum. And, you know, again, cramped conditions, glacial pace of processing people, just we're seeing the same problems, you know, just sort of play out over and over. And predictably, Republicans are pouncing on this moment as like a way to paint displaced people as subhuman. and also to try and create a scandal that they can campaign on for Joe Biden, because xenophobia is a great motivating tactic for their base, which is to point at something at the board and say, look what's happening because of Joe Biden. Now get out there and vote for someone who will treat them like not people. And we've already seen pictures of the fucking Border Patrol, like on horses, whipping people. I don't know if you saw those images yet, but it is a really, really terrible scene. And Biden, is totally aware of this. I think the dynamic, especially as it relates to the conservative sort of painting of this incident right now. And I think that's why he's barely changed the policy since he's took office, because he doesn't want to give the right the optic win of essentially being humane and allowing them to turn it into, this guy's just, he's just basically burning the borders down. You know, it's free for all over here at this point. Right. And then at the same time, continued sort of disregard for Haiti's place in the Western Hemisphere and why we're at this place, because there's typically a really strong connection between people who are seeking asylum in the United States or trying to get into the United States and us meddling in their country at some point prior to that and destabilizing it. And this is
Haiti's a really good example of that for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the backdrop behind all of this is like the earthquake. It's Haiti having lost its president to assassination very recently. And yeah, it's sad to see, you know, the fact that Biden isn't doing very much right now.
Yeah.
And is not changing post Trump, is not really reversing many of these policies. Yeah, it definitely feels like an optics thing for sure.
Yeah, right. It's the only way he can manage, I think, because already there's problems as it relates to, you know, the COVID mandates. He's trying to play walk a fine line with that. There's also, like, he's got the UN stuff happening this week where he's, like, going to try and, like, beg, like, Macron to, like the U.S. again because the whole submarine sail incident. But, yeah,
what was
I think
incident? I kind of saw a vague reference to that, but
because
France's.
Yeah, because they were like, hey, like, we sell nuclear subs, not you guys to Australia. It's all part of this pact of the New Zealand, Australia, sort of U.S. sort of, Pacific pact against China. But, you know, when it comes to the Haitians, you know, like, there have, ever since that earthquake in 2010, you know, it's caused many people to seek opportunity outside of the country at a larger rate. And then the pandemic killed off a lot of jobs that people had in places like Brazil or Chile and things like that. So they're moving further to try and find a way to survive. And this time there were a lot of social media rumors that were like fueling a lot of the optimism for these migrants, which essentially that they were like, well, there's protected status for Haitians. But that was really only applying to the people that were within the United States. And now they're being met at the border with whips and horses and just saying like, this now is not the time, and putting people on flights back to a country that is like verging on a like full on like hot civil war.
Yeah.
And so many people are like, this doesn't even make sense. Like, this is like cruelty upon cruelty to do this. And, you know, to the point of like U.S. intervention in Haiti, this has been an issue. You know, Haiti's economic development was hamstrung the second that they liberated themselves with a slave rebellion from France. And France essentially said, okay, we'll acknowledge your independence if you pay us for the lost property that the slave owners experienced as a result of you liberating yourselves. And those payments were being made from the beginning of the 19th century up until the last payment, I think, was made in the 1940s. And, you know, again, the U.S. was very, very quickly entered Haiti, like towards the beginning of the 20th century, took over the treasury and was sort of essentially saying like, okay, 40% of all the wealth in this country is going to be redirected towards quote unquote debt that you owe the U.S. or France. And this has just been, this has kept Haiti from actually being able to grow as a nation and also be part of a global economy. So just like so many layers of trauma and death to deal with. But this is the thing that the American media or mainstream media will never do, is like give you a real primer on these countries where people are coming from and understanding what the U.S.'s role is and how they got to where they are. and on some level should be arguing why we should actually be helping these people, because it's typically, it's always reasons to like why we shouldn't. I mean, Joe Biden famously said in like the 90s that like Haiti was just inconsequential to the United States. And that's why he was focused more on the Balkans. So, yeah.
I actually didn't know he said that. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, and it's like very, like, he said it in very dark terms, like essentially saying like, if it sunk into the sea, like we wouldn't really,
Jesus Christ,
we wouldn't think twice about it.
90s Biden tells on modern day Biden a lot, like quotes from 90s Biden, like about Israel. And
he said, if Haiti just quietly sunk into the Caribbean or rose up 300 feet, it wouldn't matter a whole lot in terms of our interest.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah. That was 1994.
That is wild. That is not a great quote.
No, but he's not. He's full of not great quotes.
Right.
You know, like, and it, all the time you're like, no, he said that. He's sort of one of those people where you go, he said that? And then at the other side of your mind, you're all like, oh, yeah, he said that shit. Yep, right. I can also see that.
Yeah. I mean, the hope is that he is politically adaptable and changes and like kind of feels the pressure to move towards a more humanitarian place. But that is... Yeah, when you're doing shit like what he's doing at the border right now, it kind of suggests that he hasn't really changed that much with regards to how he feels about
it. It's just not a fight. He, you know, this is like another thing. Like, I think he expended a lot of political capital, like the visibly because of the Afghanistan thing, by saying like, we shouldn't have been there. This is always going to happen. So someone had to do it because every person before me lied that they were going to do it. So we have to do this to like move things along. Yeah, is there a better way to do it? Yeah, probably, but he didn't. And I think, you know, immigration is just another one of those third rail issues in this country where if you suddenly have any movement towards a humane policy towards allowing people into this country or people who are looking for a better life or asylum, that all it's going to do is you're going to now have to face just a media culture war against this idea that you're saying like America doesn't matter and this is just some place for people to come flood and be dirty or whatever.
Right.
And I don't think, it doesn't seem, I don't know how many people have moved sort of past being able to look at a situation like that and kind of not have that take up all the oxygen in the news.
Yeah. And it's another example of just, you know, the U.S. government basically understaffing the people who are processing people who are making claims of asylum. And then, you know, they, even if they had the right policy in place, they would, you know, just be like, yeah, but it's the same thing with the distribution of rent relief and, you know, the eviction ban. It's like they can have all these big ideas and policies, but then they don't actually staff it up. So you don't have the bureaucracy in place to actually do anything with your ideas.
Right. I think Del Rio is having a huge problem with that, like specifically, right? Because they're arresting a bunch of people. They're putting a lot of these people in jail and they just don't have the staff to take care of these individuals, to process them. Like it really is like in Del Rio, it is bad right now.
Yeah. And the sad thing is that all these images just will make someone who's not as informed just think that there's no solution to something like this. And it's like, well, I don't know. We have Border Patrol. We have, you know, customs people who work on this, but they still, I mean, this is why we got to just tighten stuff up rather than really understanding like, no, we're not servicing these people in the manner that we should be. We're not creating we don't have the actual infrastructure to deal with this because this is only going to increase as climate changes and gets more intense and causes more like environmental disasters. People are going to move. That's just a nailed on fact of our world.
Yeah.
And borders are not. People still move. So there is some like, I don't know when that reckoning is going to come, but, you know, that's going to be a huge part of how we adapt to the changing world is understanding that like we have to let go of these ideas of like, no, you're from there. You can only stay there and you stay there till you die. And if you don't, like, don't even think about coming here because we only have enough stuff for us and we're not even worried on trying to think of how we can make it all work.
I mean, for a lot of people, the reckoning's already happening. Like the, you know, Human Rights Watch published a letter on Wednesday of last week just saying, you know, this policy of like heavily guarding the routes that people cross the border that are hospitable, so that pushing people to extremely hot and unforgiving terrain, like they are killing people. They're straight up killing people as the world gets hotter and hotter. Heat waves are already the deadliest form of natural disaster in the U.S., and they're just pushing people into regions where, like, in terms of how much it's changing, the number of days over 100 degrees Fahrenheit per year is expected to climb to 60 by mid-century, up from the annual average of 28 between 1971 and 2000. Like, that's more than doubled in, you know, 50 years because of climate change. It's going to really kill a lot of people. And but again, it's like sort of this, we're not doing anything, like they're the ones who are doing it type logic, that conservatism by doing nothing, like just by doing nothing, rather it allows the Democratic Party to just not get called out for doing cruel things, but, you know, passively do the cruel policy that makes it easy for them to triangulate with conservatives.
Yeah, I mean, so there are so many thoughts regarding heat waves. One is that, like, actually nobody knows that they are, like, the deadliest natural disasters. Like, people don't think about them. They don't happen in as shocking of a way as, like, a wildfire or or a storm. You know, it's such a different kind of death. It is also an incredibly terrible death. Mm-hmm. It is really, really brutal. Like, if you, like, look up an article that tells you exactly how people die from heat waves, it is not pretty. And on top of that, you have Border Patrol agents dumping water at the border. Like, when these nonprofit organizations leave water for migrants along those routes, they dump the water out.
Yeah.
And that to me is really something that every time I think about that, it's just like, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine doing that as policy.
Right. Because, and the way I think we have these department set up, it's just to be like, okay, who's willing to brutalize these people? It has nothing to do with compassion, meeting these people with compassion. It's like, these are invaders, so take away anything they have that would potentially give them safe passage. Like you're saying, like, cynically just like cutting open water containers and just leaving it, so there's nothing for a fucking human person who is wandering the earth to try and have a better outcome for themselves. Just fundamentally, we have just such a barbaric system. And I think just in general, in most countries, just think of immigration as this like dirty thing bad thing, rather than like acknowledging our place in like a global community and understanding, like, you know, at a certain point, I think a lot of Americans are under the assumption that America will be the best place to live forever, no matter what happens to the planet. And, you know, I think not many people put themselves in a place with, what if you were trying to cross a border?
Right.
And what does that look like? But I think exceptionalism has completely put that out of people's minds, because that's the only way you could look at this and not have any compassion. Like, I think me, as someone who's so worried about what the future holds for this planet and future generations, it's all I can think of is like, well, that could be you. That could be us. That could be anyone.
Yeah. Could be anyone. I mean, except maybe the super rich, right?
Right. Like,
the super rich are going to be just fine. And other than that, it could be anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you want your kids and grandkids to be treated when they're trying to cross the Canadian border? And like everybody's trying to get the fuck out of America.
Right.
All right. Let's flush our systems with a nice story of down home activism succeeding. You know, last summer, there were a lot of organizations and schools circulating lists of suggested books and other materials to help broaden people's perspective on race and white supremacy. You know, not all of them were done in good faith. That's probably, we can discuss that another time. But in York, Pennsylvania, their school district's diversity committee released a list of all kinds of great stuff for students, teachers, and parents to check out. And like clockwork, concerned parents stepped in. They couldn't process the demographic changes in their community and decided that the reason that their community was less white was because kids are reading books about American anti-Black racism, basically. Yeah.
That seems the logic. At least that's the logic I've seen. It's like, well, this is causing more racism, huh?
What?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? The comments at these school board meetings, and this is sort of pre the full blown critical race theory screaming matches. Like this happened like sort of on the heels of the summer of last year. Parents were saying the same stuff. This is racist against white people. Like there was like a children's book that was like about Rosa Parks, and it was like the most children's book I've ever seen. Like I can't have my kid reading this and then feeling guilty that they're white. No.
Yeah.
And I can tell that this book is what it's going to say, rather than like, you know, being about a kid's book that's humanizing all children and being like, there's nothing fucking different. So because of all this outrage, the school board banned the materials, or rather they said they're putting a freeze on the list until they had time to review it, because they don't like the word banned. So the great thing is that the kids at this high school, they didn't let that stop them from educating themselves. And they certainly didn't appreciate the sort of like unilateral nature of these like books and articles and stuff just being restricted. So they started protesting daily. It started off with like a couple kids, and then it grew into like the hundreds. Oh. And they eventually created the Panther, I think, Anti-Racism Union, Student Union. And they're, right. I think their mascot's called the Panthers, but you know, again, you love to see it. The great coincidence.
They knew, I'm sure those parents knew that was going to scare the shit out of Fox News.
Yeah, their parents were like, ah, Panthers, no! So their voices were eventually heard. They were able to go to a school board meeting to like sort of speak up on what they thought. And this one student, Ida Gupta, said, our thoughts are being invalidated. There's only one portion of the community that this ban represents, and it's not ours.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And like it kicked off like a whole like domino effect of support, because they were so vocal. Like parents sort of were like, damn, okay, like I guess I should. If the students also care, like there's ways for me to also get involved. The banned books thing ended up with one of the authors of some of the books, this guy, Brad Meltzer, he came up to give comment. Like the library said, like, you know what? We don't care what the ban is. Like we will fully stock all of these books and make them widely available. And then on Monday, this school board unanimously voted to unfreeze or whatever, unrestrict, whatever words they want to use, those books and articles and documentaries. However, though, along the way, they were like mumbling stuff about socialism and like communism, even though it's unanimous. Like, well, you know, it's communism, obviously, like we got to keep it. Anyway, fine. It's unanimous.
Yes. Wow. Communism, the famous communist principle of doing what the majority of people want to do. Yeah, that's awesome. That's very encouraging. I do keep coming back to this idea that people are like pointing to how like nationally unpopular like some of this shit is, and like that, like, yeah, the majority of people want, like, recognize that racism is wrong. And for some reason it just popped into my head as we were doing this story. I think it was like my inner barometer was like, this is getting too encouraging, so I have to put something depressing in here. That Nazism was very unpopular, you guys. It was polled in the 30s for decades, and then they, like, below the 30s, and then they swept to power. They never won a popular election. So,
yeah,
you know, as long as this is hanging around, as long as they're trying to silence people who are telling the truth, you know, we can't be safe unless we're, you know, constantly fighting this shit like these kids did.
It's like we said earlier, the established power just coming in and saying, well, this is what people want. And, you know, and that not reflecting those opinions at all.
Yeah. Well, one of their high school teachers, like, sort of gave this comment. He's like, man, these kids are like heroes. Like, you know, like, I can't believe like the effort they put into this. And that's like everything they did is commendable. But then, you know, it's just sort of like this idea that he was sort of pointing out. He's like, you know, most Americans and school children and most parents, they support this kind of educational material for their kids. Mm-hmm. Like, and they know that it's actually, unfortunately, it's part of American history, but it must be taught. So it's just like a feel good story in that sense. But I think also, like, to your point about like Nazis and stuff, I think kids now are people now, they have an ear for dog whistles. Like, where before, the dog whistle only resonated with the dogs you were trying to get, whose attention you were trying to get, because it wasn't resonating at that frequency for you to be aware of. And I think so many more people now, you know, and in some cases to an extreme, can be like, just sort of parse through things and understand like what's happening. And I think that's probably the best defense that we have, is that people just general awareness of like what discrimination looks like in most of its forms, that it's like hard to sort of like give it like a very, you know, innocuous or euphemistic name of a bill or something and hope that no one notices.
I'm so blown away by the idea that learning about racist history is going to make people feel guilty. Like, it might be my ego talking, but I'm like, I read about horrible racist white people in the past, and I'm like, oh, thank God I'm not like them. Like, you know, it makes me kind of feel better about myself in a way.
You're like, oh, good. There's a baseline at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Doing better. Better.
Above average. All right.
I'm not Nathaniel Bedford Forrest.
Right.
Good. That's a start.
We just learned about this guy, Gouverneur Morris. We did an episode about him, and he was this very, very anti-slavery founding father that we'd never heard of before. And, you know, my wife and I talking about our public education and not having been taught about this guy and wondering why he was so buried. And, you know, it's like, because he makes everybody else look bad. But I think in not studying these things, we also lose out on learning about cool people like that who were doing the right thing.
Right.
Yeah.
That there was someone standing up to them during the founding of the country. Because before, you thought it was a we love America, sign it, bye. Mm-hmm. And also, like, the way you're taught history, I remember, I when I was very young, I didn't think slavery existed until the Civil War.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like, that it was like a, like, it became a problem. And I'm like, there weren't slaves during the, for a while? Okay. Didn't realize that. I mean, like, so it's funny how, even how, like, when slavery is even introduced to school kids, like, in a textbook, it's almost like, it's almost treating it in a vacuum. It's like, and then there was the Civil War because slavery happened that one day.
They were trying to do a slavery, and they, the good guys fought them off like the Avengers and won.
Right. Yeah. And they'll tell you, well, it was the times. That's how people just were. They didn't know any better. And then you learn that all these people did know better and said, hey, this is bad. Right. And Thomas Jefferson and everyone said no to that. So, I don't know.
Yeah, where's very clear. That wasn't a scene in Hamilton, was it?
They left that one out.
Where the one goes like, hey, y'all tripping about slavery, huh?
Right.
Like, hey, come on, pipe down, pipe down. We love Alexander.
Like, they literally leave it unspoken. He's like, we know who's doing the planting.
Right.
And it's just like, oh.
That's actually not good enough.
Yeah. Right. Moving
that's
on.
Not an oh type moment. I'm sorry. The bar is too low for that oh.
All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. And according to the National Retail Federation, 2021.
That sounds like a fucking, like, the name of our government in like 20 years.
Exactly. This is the party that we're all voting for in 20 years.
I'm voting for the National Retail Federation.
I was going to say it sounds like those guys from The Phantom Menace
who, the Trade Federation.
The Trade Federation. It's like, we have a trade.
Creepy Asian aliens that they're like, no, was that racist? Yeah.
No, let's just ignore that. Let's still love the prequels and ignore all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm a prequel kid. I don't know, what are you talking about? But it sounds like we're gonna be run by the Trade Federation in 30 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So they're saying, and this feels a little bit bold to me, they're saying 2021 is going to be a record-breaking year for Halloween spending. I feel like any prediction on like behavior that's that far in the future just seems a little cavalier based on like what we've just lived through. Like
maybe, I would say if you would use a folk, if you were to take a focus group that is just me, I would say that's very accurate.
You're like, I love this. It's actually going to be triple last year. Well, this is the thing that they're looking at, right? Because they said when the CDC last year was like, do not do Halloween, assholes. Do not do it. Please, for the love of everything that's holy, just fucking don't. Nobody listened. People still spent over $8 billion. This year, they're saying it's going to be over $10 billion when it comes to costumes, decoration, candy, and they say pet costumes even more. That's the shit that's really on the come up is pet costumes. So a lot of the spending, a bulk of it, $3.3 billion, is going to go to costumes. That's 27% more than last year. And that's like, you know, like the last time it was like spending was at that level was 2017. And then $3 billion on candy, another three that they think is going to be on decorations. And I know we've seen people lose their shit over the 12-foot skeleton, you know, like I've for like an entire year. We know people that have been up to Brandy Posey. I'm looking at you who have been just cannot stop thinking about this 12-foot skeleton. So, you know, they're saying like that on top of kids costumes, they just see it going up and up and up, but the pet costume thing is experiencing a lot of growth, and that might make sense if people who actually kept their adopted pets from the pandemic, you know, that they would be dressing up their pets, because for me, I don't really dress up, but my partner and I, we like to find shit for our dog. That is fun.
So
I can definitely, I'm like, I see that part of the spending.
I've already got a little Toon Squad jersey for my dog, and that's just that's just the start of it.
What's your which jersey? Is it just generic Toon Squad or character?
It's just generic Toon Squad. Okay. No, they didn't make like a specific like Bugs Bunny, like Michael Jordan one.
Right.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I'm. It seems like a combination of like because the summer was shitty, and we do have vaccines, so people are going to feel a little bit more, you know, lively. For Halloween. Plus, you can do this shit outside. trick or treating does take place outside. And I feel like to get into it, it's like you can really just decorate the exterior of where you live and still kind of like get, you know, express yourself like that rather than like coming inside and seeing all this other spooky shit that you have set up. But I don't know. What's your take here, Joan?
My honest feeling is I think the reason like Halloween will be big this year and why it's kind of just like spooky season has been growing in popularity in like recent years is kind of like tied to the fact that we all feel like we're going to die. We're all going to die. Like instead, like even before pandemic times, like, you know, fucking global warming and all this, like we just feel very close to the brink. And I truly believe that like Halloween is like this little release valve every year where we all kind of like get to collectively like laugh and have fun with death. So it makes sense to me that it has just been, you know, I feel like in the last, I mean, I've always been kind of like a big Halloween fan, but I just feel like in the last like 5 to 10 years, I've just seen a huge blow up online of people who are like, I'm a horror influencer. I like love horror. I love spooky stuff. So I think it makes sense that this would like, even outside of, you know, whatever the trends are saying, like psychologically to me, it makes sense that this is going to be the year that we're all like, yeah, like, fuck it. Like, let's just all like laugh at the grim. Let's all just like put on Pennywise costumes and laugh at the Grim Reaper.
Right. Like, yeah. I love this. So funny. That bloody knife prop that he had.
Hell yeah. I mean, yeah.
Like, get more macabre.
Yes. After the year we've had, like, yeah, what's so scary about a bloody knife?
There was another weird stat in here that said 69% of adults surveyed had already picked out their costume for this year.
Like picked it out, like put it together, or just like decided what they're
going
to do?
They said if you, they've already picked out, like not to say that it's been purchased, but they know what they're going to how they're going to dress up, which is wild to me. I'm definitely an outlier when it comes to Halloween. I think of something literally the 2 days before I would have to go to a costume party. Like I have friends though who are like keeping track of shit throughout the year. I'm like, oh, that's stupid. That might make a good costume. They got their eye on it. Yeah. And those to see 69% in September already.
Yeah. To your point, Joan, I just think people are really ready to
die.
I think skipping Halloween, like that's one holiday that like just the human like experience needs. Like we can't just skip Halloween. We need to dress up like gory car accidents and go out and walk around each other. And my 3-year-old has been asking when it's going to get spooky, like for weeks now, which is early.
Not from my perspective, but you're right. I'll let you parent your way.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd be like, what are you doing?
It was spookery.
Should have been months ago. What are you doing?
You have a costume picked out, Joan?
Ooh, I have a couple.
Yeah. Okay, so what's your rhythm in which you understand when you're gonna have a costume? Like, do you have a deadline? Do you typically know by this time of the year?
Usually know by this time of the year. I will say, like, I did go through like a hard like kind of like, as much as I love Halloween, I hard like not big on costumes phase because I was doing a lot of like sketch comedy with UCB for a bunch of years and costumes just didn't feel as special. And I got much more into like spooky dress up, you know, like Halloween, like really nice, like Halloween themed dresses, like suits, stuff like that, that I still incorporate into my Halloween wardrobe. Like I'm very excited. I just got a like Beetlejuice inspired like power suit, I would describe it. Like imagine like halfway between Beetlejuice and The Good Wife. That's what like the look is. And I have an event that I'm planning that for. We're all going to like a little like spooky like Halloween cocktail soiree that I'm ready to wear that for.
Ooh.
But yeah, usually like, I don't know. I don't really have I don't know that I have any like consistent costume rhythm. It's just kind of like what I'm feeling at the time. Yeah. I will say one of the straight up costumes we have planned out is Kate Raft, former guest of the show and comedy partner. I've always been very into the Chucky movies. They are just recently getting super into the Chucky movies. And we're going to do, like a combo costume of me as Tiffany and them as Glenn/Glenda. They're gender non-conforming, like non-binary child from seat of Chucky. So we're gonna that's gonna be one of our costumes, or one of my costumes. Not all of our costumes are gonna be group costumes, but we're definitely doing that as a group at some point.
Yeah.
Nice.
What about you, Jack? You got costumes? I know you and your family. I see your family photos. Y'all go in.
I have the same Batman suit that I wear every year. Just
the one you say this if ill-fitting Batman.
Yeah, it's the crotch is about like an inch too short, so it's major.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's Batman who has a towel on.
That's right.
Batman just out the shower.
Low crotch Batman.
Yeah. So our 3-year-old is into superheroes. That makes it super easy. Our 5-year-old is into trains and garbage trucks, and he wants to be a garbage truck. I have no fucking clue I'm gonna. That's like one of those requests for kids who have dads that are handy,
yeah,
and like good at building stuff, and that just isn't me. So
Have you ever seen those like really impressive like Transformers costumes that people make?
Yeah.
Like that into a garbage truck would be mind blowing.
Okay, don't let your kid hear that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Actually, put your kid on really quick. I'm like, you know what'd be cool? Here, let me show you this video. This little boy went from an 18 wheeler into a fucking full on robot.
Yeah.
That would be cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever I asked for stuff like that, my mom was just like, no. And I was just like, all right, I'll buy this one hat that says SWAT on it and we're all black. Yeah. And I'll be Keanu Reeves from Speed.
The first Halloween where I was like, we always grew up with those costumes that were like plastic mask and then like plastic smock with like the character's face on it. It's like, yeah, it's like how elf dressed. But the first Halloween that I was like, oh, I can make my own costume. I can build my own thing was like game changer for me.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Do you remember?
Yeah. This is like former life, but I was very into the X-Files at the time. And I put together a little like Agent Mulder costume.
Fox Mulder.
Oh, okay.
Mulder. Yes. Yeah. And probably I wanted to go with Scully, but you know, different times, different plays.
Right.
That is something I should do. I should fulfill that dream at some point and do a Scully.
I mean, Jillian, she's killing it right now.
Jillian, I am watching so much just like X-Files right now. Comet TV is just airing it all the time. And I'm like, holy shit, she's so good in that.
Yeah.
She's so good in everything. But I'm just like, yeah, I have good taste. I have great taste as a kid. She's great.
Shout out to me as a youth.
Shout out to me. I was so unique. I watched the X-Files in the 90s. Come on.
Yeah. Who else?
Who else was doing that? Like, I would watch the Simpsons and the X-Files. Like, I just like unique taste back then.
I know. Yeah. I'm a unique one. I'm an outlier.
All right. Let's talk about some like kind of topical Halloween costumes that are being floated. We went through Pop Sugar's like list of different ideas, and I thought there were like some cute ideas in there. I think the one that was on the list, and also Miles, you found in the place you go for your Halloween costume advice, the New York Post, is the Bernie Sanders like sitting with the mask on inauguration with the mittens, just looking unhappy to be there. They've converted that into what the New York Post is describing as a sexy Halloween costume.
It's that e-girl vibe because it's from dollskill.com. So they're the one making it. So it's like, you know, it's a little bit something different for the youth.
The coat doesn't appear to be trying to approximate what Bernie was doing, but.
Yeah, I would say my issue with this is that it's a very like performance based costume. So like to get you gotta like fully sit and do the pose to get it across. Right. And it's like, Are you ready to do that all night?
Right. Unless part of I guess that's where a fun costume is. Like you'd find a way to build the seat into the ass of your costume, so you could be like, "Oh, who am I?" And then you just like, boom, the pose, and they're like, "Oh shit, that's Bernie."
I thought
you were just somebody who was masking and had mittens on.
The other one that's performance based, and I don't know how you do it necessarily, but if somebody pulls it off, it would be amazing, is they suggested doing some manner of recreation of the Bidens next to the Carters, where the Carters
I feel like that's easier to pull. At least there's something more evocative about that than the Bernie one. Like,
right, yeah.
Like, I think, yeah, if you like get this, like, you know, I think you'd obviously, you would be Biden, right, or Jill, or you'd be the one of the Bidens, and then you'd want to like make a little like chair with a little Carter inside sitting on it to like attach to your side, and then you would just kneel and you get it across.
Right.
I think that's great. It's a couple costume. Even, yeah.
You do like a Muppet style Jimmy Carter.
Oh yeah.
And then you could do a puppet shit. You could be like, "What's that, Jimmy?" And then he's like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah.
Just doing a two-man show.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's a performance-based one I like.
Yeah. Yeah. See, and I'm so excited by the idea, but then the second I think about the effort, I'm like, okay, what do I need? Like a child, like a preschool reading chair that's like plush, or do I have to make one and wrap it in fabric, then make a Muppet?
That would be a good one for my family.
I was going to say, if you have a kid, that's a good one.
With a five-year-old.
Yeah, you should go to your five-year-old, you're going as Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
No discussion.
Yeah, especially when you're like, okay, what did you want to be? I want to be Iron Man. You're like, well, put this wig on because you Rosalind Carter. Now get in this seat.
Get in this chair.
Yeah.
There's another one that, I don't know, it feels a little weird so it's Promising Young Woman, the nurse costume.
That's not a good idea. I'm not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because first of all, most people are just going to think that you're a sexy nurse.
Exactly.
And then I guess you have to go into the explanation of like, I'm specifically this sexy nurse. And I don't know, like, I don't know. That seems like,
and then you're like,
kill.
Oh, that sounds traumatic. Yeah. For the costumes character. Well, no, it's fine.
Yeah. I guess, it's a movie about how our society enables and excuses rape culture. Mm-hmm, and the costume, it could have been designed by one of the frat guys in the movie.
Yes.
Like, right.
And by the way,
you can't bob for apples and have a good story after.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, like, my character gets like murdered by one of these frat guys. Like, spoilers for Promising Young Woman.
Right.
Sorry. If you see, you're going to see it.
Hey, spoiler alert for Promising Young Woman. If you haven't seen it now, what's going on?
Yeah. This is me before I'm about to be murdered by that guy from Glow.
Yeah.
Right? That guy from Glow. I forgot. I don't know his real name.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so bad with names. But yes, that was enough for me. But yeah, guy from Glow.
Yeah. Carrie Bechet's husband. This is me before I was about to be murdered by Carrie Bechet's husband. That's also how I know him.
So that's one of the bad ones. There's a bunch of Olivia Rodrigo looks, like her album cover, White House appearance, one of her videos. The cat lawyer with, I feel like you could knock that out with just a color printer.
Yeah.
And a suit. Basically.
Wait, what was a cat lawyer?
It was a lawyer on a Zoom call who couldn't get rid of the cat filter.
Oh, yeah.
So you could just put the cat filter over your face.
That's the thing, is like the overly meme-y ones, and because I don't know how to pronounce meme, using it as an adjective, but those meme-y ones, those memes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are like, they just feel like sort of flash in the pan.
Yeah.
Although I don't know why, at the same time, I'm like loving the Carters and Bidens version one. Yeah. I'm like, shit right there.
Yeah.
Well, actually, disregard everything I'm saying. I don't know what I'm talking about.
The only Mimi costumes I want to see are of Mimi from the Drew Carey Show.
Thank you.
Yo, shout out my boy. My one of my best friends in junior high, he went as Mimi from Drew Carey Show. He killed that shit in sixth grade.
That is very fucking. You had a very cool friend.
Yeah. He was just like, because he loved the Drew Carey Show. Yeah. And he was like, his whole thing was like, man, Drew Carey's like too normal looking, bro. It's not a fucking costume. Like, we're fucking, if I go as Mimi, I got the muumuu on, you know what I mean? Yeah. The wig, the makeup. Yeah.
Did anyone give him shit? Or like, were people just like, fuck yeah?
Most people, nah, no one really gave him shit. Most people were just like confused. What people didn't understand, like the reference.
Okay.
And I didn't either, because when he came to school, like, I said, what the fuck is this? He said, Mimi from Drew Carey Show. I said, I don't watch that show. And then he had to, because there was no internet like to readily show a reference photo, he had to like go home and bring a TV guide the next day and was like, this person. And I'm like, oh shit, that tracks.
Yeah. I love this kid. I wanna know where this kid is now. I I love it. It's, yeah. Drew Carey Show. I love the Drew Carey Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mayor from Mayor of Easttown. I feel like if you just vape and are in a cold weather climate and can dress in cold weather clothes, that would be fairly easy.
If you can get a Wawa wrapper that, you know, flesh it out a little bit. That's right. That's like, I feel like that's going to be a very low effort costume this
year. Yeah, you need like a M65 military jacket over like a Uniqlo down vest with a turtleneck.
Yeah.
And you're vaping, baby. You got an Emmy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then The Weeknd had some kind of iconic looks this year that would be easy enough to pull off with just clothes and a glove and some face bandages.
Sure.
Those are kind of the ones that jumped out at me.
There are some other ones like in this. They have another article. It's like 50 plus clever costumes that'll make you say, why didn't I think of that? And one is a chip on your shoulder and someone just is holding a bag of Lay's on their shoulder.
Yeah, no, that's pretty. Why didn't I think
of
that?
Come on now.
Because, I don't know. Stupid. Well, I didn't think of that.
Because it sucks.
Because it sucks, and I'm pretty great. I would never think of something so dumb.
Or if you're a smart cookie, you're wearing a cap and gown that's with like you're holding cookies.
Mm, yeah.
So a nose mask with in like a runner's gear for runny nose. That was pretty.
Oh boy.
So don't do those. Don't do promising young woman or anything too meme-y.
Unless it's
meme-y from Drew Carey show. Or the Carters
or the Biden Carters.
Yeah. If you could somehow do both the Bidens with meme-y from Drew Carey show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
What if that crossover happened?
Yeah. If Mimi Bobek were a Biden.
You remember her last name. Good job.
I had to look it up right now because I was trying to figure out who the performer, like what they're up to now.
Okay.
Because a part of me was like, I don't know, did they go MAGA or some shit? I never know. Like, Kathy Kinney seems like she's on the up.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. It means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.